The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Members of Navy Federal can enjoy a hassle-free car buying experience. You can learn all about this at NavyFederal.org.
If you look at my resume, man, it looks really good. But what you don't see is in between every one of those great bullets is a bunch of failure and a bunch of hardship, obstacle after obstacle. But, you know, the difference is those aren't my bullets. Those obstacles and those failures aren't my defining moments. It's everything that comes after that that you grow from.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening, watching, viewing, and please go hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today we are going to throw it back to an older episode of ours, a rebroadcast of one of our very good friends, Aaron Kendall, who happens to have one of the craziest, most outrageous, and kind of funny and disturbing stories all mixed into one. Just whenever you think the story is finished, it just keeps building and getting better and crazier, and you are going to want to keep into this one till the very end, I promise you that. So with that being said, let's get to it.
Morgan, I got one for you this morning. Let's do a movie quote.
Send it. I'm always prepared.
All right.
I can't be got.
Here's a quote. Let off some steam.
Let off some steam. That is from Commando after Arnie threw that pipe through Bennett, stuck him in the wall, and the steam was coming out of the pipe. He looked at him and said, let off some steam, Bennett. That right?
Man, if we ever caught any of our guys walking around on a chainmail wife beater, that's what he's wearing.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, watch the movie again.
Oh, really?
If anybody hasn't seen Commando in a while, watch it again. It is so terribly awesome. It's like the best movie ever made. But yeah, chainmail wife beater with literally a dog leash.
Right, around his neck.
Around his neck. I don't know if that dude's still
alive. He had a weightlifting glove, right?
Yeah. And his run was worse than Seagal's, which is probably the most horrific run ever.
Yeah,
almost as bad as Phoebe's off of Friends.
It's pretty bad.
It's terrible.
I forgot about Phoebe.
Oh, Phoebe.
I remember Seagal's run, though.
Smelly cat.
Yeah.
Smelly cat.
Yeah, but his was bad. He actually, like,
Seagal sensei. He's police now. He doesn't run anywhere. Chase him down in a car. Still you ever watch that Lawman? Lawman? Steven Seagal Lawman?
Yeah, that was really terrible as well.
I loved his movies, man.
His
back
movies
in that
were great.
90s genre, we had, because what was the 80s? It was Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis.
Van Damme.
Yeah,
Bruce Willis wasn't in the 80s. He was in the 90s. Die Hard opened him up to be that. Like the
right, but then that was late 80s and early 90s, man, is when that kind of our genre of movies kicked off and the martial arts.
Yeah. Seagal.
Jeff Speakman is a perfect weapon.
Van Damme. Which Van Damme's still a badass in my book.
He is, man. I
still fits the part.
He does, dude. Did you see when he did the splits in between those two Volvo trucks?
Yeah, because then Chuck Norris did it on two airplanes.
You're kidding me.
You didn't see that?
No.
Yeah.
You see that? Yeah. So Van Damme did that, and then of course Chuck had to one up him, so there was two 747s flying through the air, and there's a picture of him on the one tips of each of the wings. Nobody outdoes Chuck, man.
Oh, dude.
Come on.
Freaking Chuck, we love you, man.
Yeah, like that.
I ran into
him. Yeah, there it is right there. Look. Then he's got, I didn't even see the ones with the people on his head. Is that SEAL team on top of him?
It is.
Oh, man.
God almighty.
Man.
Well,
All right, guys. Patreon question of the day comes from our friend Kathleen, one of our teammates. She asked, what is one of your favorite foods on the East Coast?
On the East Coast? Crab.
Crab?
Yeah.
You got a specific restaurant you like it, bro?
Which one did I hit up the other day with some dear friends of mine? Oh, actually, no, they made it at the house. And they have this, they took Old Bay and apple cider vinegar and made this dipping sauce. Bro. I mean, in my opinion, the blue crabs are harder to eat than crawfish, and you got to work more at it because you got to take the key off. And then you don't eat the lungs, by the way. They didn't, I think they hooked the southern boy up and let me eat the lungs, but mine was cooked at home. They cooked them, they boiled them, and then they put them in this brown paper bag and let them steam. And then they made that apple cider vinegar with that Old Bay. Brosif.
I must tell you what, man, we had an old boy the other day come over and cook some crawfish. And he did it differently than we at all, because normally you purge.
We've been cooking crawfish for 20 something years,
man.
And this old boy shows up at the house to cook some crawfish for one of our parties, and
did it completely opposite of the way we do it. Yeah. And it was good.
He gets his water up to a roll and is going to dump the bugs in. And I was like, hey, man, we like our spicy. He's like, I was waiting for somebody to say something. He's like, y'all trust me? I was like, yeah. He throws the bugs into the boiling water and it simmers. And as soon as it comes back up to a roll, he dumps them out into the cooler and then puts the seasoning on top of them, shuts the cooler for 15 minutes. Best bugs I ever had.
They looked hot.
The cleanup was easy.
Man, it's just, normally...
We soak them, put ice in them, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Tons of ingredients. He just sprinkled his, steamed them. Meat came right out of the shell. He spent a couple of years down in Louisiana.
Yeah, somebody taught him how to do that.
Some old timer on the bayou.
Yeah.
They were good. That's how we do them now.
Yeah.
For all our listeners out there, we don't spend 45 minutes seasoning the water.
Yeah, because the way it works, that's the great part about being an American. So if you go to Italy, man, and all the families are old and they have their lasagna recipe, it's been in the family, you can't mess with that. The beautiful thing about being an American, dude, is it's a melting pot of every kind of culture, tradition, and background, so you can change. You have literally permission to change up your recipes. And when we find something that, I mean, we think, you know, it tastes good and it works well, and kind of like, this is the way we do it, and that's it.
Then we tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Put some ranch dressing on it.
Right. And then that's your go-to fail safe right there. But
or bacon.
Or bacon. Bacon and ranch.
Something new comes along, man. Don't ever be afraid to upgrade.
Thanks for the question. We really appreciate it, Kathleen.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Let's get into a listener story today, which is brought to you by Fred, and Marcus will bring that to us.
Let me start off by saying thank you to all of y'all for everything. My story starts on June 1st, 2018. Due to a bad set of events, a friend of mine ended up passing away by his own hand. Afterwards, I realized something wasn't right with me mentally, so I told my chief about what was going on. He sent me to be evaluated, and I had two or three different acronyms thrown at me and a bunch of people saying it's understandable given what happened, so I was discharged from the Navy. Over the past year, I've tried to make sense and deal with the crap, not just from those events, but from being discharged in and of itself. After coming home, I fell into this state of, is my biggest purpose over? It took some people who were close to me to get me back to reality, and I have to give them some props. Without them, I'd be in a pine box. Now I'm putting what I've learned into the Navy, into pursuing my nursing degree from Johns Hopkins. I listen to you guys at least once a day. Y'all can get me motivated when I start sliding back into my pile of bullshit. For my brothers, my friends, my family, and for the country, I have to be the best. I will not quit because I have amazing friends who help me get back up when I get down. Fred, thanks for writing in, brother. And we all go through those kind of those moments in our life that kind of shift us in a different direction. And that's okay. In the beginning, sometimes you don't understand why it's happening, but just know that, you know, God has a plan for everybody, and it's not yours, it's his. And sometimes when we get shifted over and we're not ready, it causes a lot of grief and uncertainty on us. But just keep leaning on your friends when you need them. Lean to the Lord and never doubt yourself, man. You said it. You got to be the best you can be and never quit. So thanks for writing in, Fred. Do you love the TNQ podcast? Make sure you subscribe to get notified about our latest episode each week. The show is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much any other podcast player. We've got a ton of great episodes and had some incredible guests, including Tim Ballard, Laura Logan, and Diana Nyad.
Do you want exclusive access to the show and bonus behind-the-scenes content? Join us at Patreon.
Yeah, guys, there's David, Reagan, Kyle, Rebecca, Beth, Michelle, and many more who've joined us on Patreon to get access to behind-the-scenes content, access to the Patreon community, and they get rare access to Morgan, Marcus, and all of our incredible guests. If you want to be a part of our team and join that so you can get all that access, help us keep putting these shows out, join us at patreon.com/teamneverquit. All right, let's get into today's show.
So we're joined today by one of my best friends. He was one of my groomsmen. We go back.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. That's right, vice versa. Aaron Kendall. Actually, his wife was calling him by his first name yesterday, and I was like, who the hell are you talking about? She's like, Kendall. I was like, oh, I forgot his name was Aaron.
Yeah, people in San Antonio.
Oh, it was A-A-Ron.
A-A-Ron. It is A-A-Ron.
I actually have your last name misspelled in my phone still.
A-A-Ron, are you here?
I think everybody does.
So, again, never quit story. But so for everybody out there, we're talking to Aaron Kendall, who is former team guy, retired team guy. He's got the sexiest half arm on the planet.
Which we got to get into that story because it's literally the like greatest story in naval special warfare.
Like one of those. Warfare. Like one of those, you actually did that to yourself and then...
Sounded made up.
Back to the house. Yeah. So his, yeah. So one of his best stories, because like I said, we've known him forever. One of the best stories he's got is when it didn't even happen at work.
Yeah. You guys need me with two hands.
Gut wrenching. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of one-handed jokes in here tonight.
Yeah. And if you, hey, look, while we're going through this, if you need a hand with anything, just let us know. We'll make sure that.
Yeah. We'll help you out.
We're pretty handy around here. So.
So before we jump into the nitty gritty of the Never Quit story, give us some background on where you're from, and so what we like to do is we like to put everything on relative terms, because the listeners out there, especially with the team guys, they think that team guys are kind of like born out of this certain genotype, and we like to express to our listeners that, hey, like, we come from everywhere, every walk of life, and that every one of our stories are different. So anything that we've been involved in, or our Never Quit stories, we're just kind of an average human being that was put in an extraordinary situation. So let's kick this bad boy off and give a little background on Kendall.
I mean, so I started working out when I was about 2 years old, training.
Most people don't do that.
Why'd you wait so long?
I was a little slow, but no, my childhood, everything in my life was pretty normal. I came from a military family. I've got a long history of military from my parents, kind of in the Vietnam era, to my grandfather on both sides in World War II, to my great-grandfather in World War I. So
that's awesome, man. Thanks.
Carrying the torch.
American warrior class.
Sort of was. I mean, I guess that was, my grandfather definitely would have been a big influence on me for that. But I grew up normal, into sports. I played everything.
Where are you from originally?
Manassas, Virginia.
Yeah, nobody knows where that is.
Yeah, it's just outside of D.C., a little small town. Shout out to Manassas. Manasty.
My people's Manasty.
Yeah. Some people might say Manasshole, but no, I love it. It's growing. It's a small town back then.
Sweet molasses.
It's growing now, but I was born in the Philippines. My parents were both active duty, Subic Bay Naval Base.
Both in the Navy?
They both were. My dad was in the Marine Corps. Right? Yeah, my dad was in the Marine Corps, joined up in Vietnam, and then ended up getting a commissioning and going over to the Navy. Was just a line officer for a number of years. But my mom, yeah, she was a JAG lawyer. She stayed in, retired as a captain. My stepdad, he's also a 20-year F-14 guy.
Oh, cool. Just, 14, huh?
Yeah,
Top Gunner?
That's right. He went to Top Gun,
What's his call sign?
Smoke.
What's that stand for?
I don't even know.
It's obviously not,
you know what?
It's obviously not cool.
Bill, what does that stand for? Normal childhood, sports, school. I don't think I was much of a student. I mean, I just got by. My parents divorced when I was young. I think I was 7 years old. So I grew up with my dad and my brother there in Manassas. My dad worked out of D.C. as a civilian most of my life. He actually worked for the JAG Corps up in Navy Washington Yard. So I grew up going to base and meeting guys and always seeing guys in uniform. But like I said, I never really had that drive. I never thought about the military being my thing. I ended up finding my niche in swimming. I was a great swimmer. I grew up top in the state of Virginia and breaststroke and stuff. But it wasn't until I graduated high school, barely. I think I graduated like a 1.2. And my dad was old school. He always has this rule of, you know, either have a job, be going to school, or get out of the house. Obviously, I was living at home still. So I was going to community college, signed up there, figured I'd still swim community college and then end up transferring somewhere still. And during this time, I think I started thinking, you know, what's my backup plan? I started looking at the SEALs. I met a SEAL that worked at the Navy Washington Yard, and he gave me one of these books. I can't even remember which one it was. It talked a little bit about each Special Forces training.
Commando.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yep. So I read that, and it kind of piqued my interest in the SEAL thing. Obviously, I was comfortable in the water. And I was going to school, reading all these SEAL books, which immediately made me an expert at all things SEAL-related. But
the fuck was that?
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
What was that?
Settle down, buddy.
Is that him?
Fucking Quado trying to come out of his belly over here. You get that on?
He ordered the special.
I don't know.
God, that was loud. I was like,
hey, what did he get? The special?
Check, please. All right. Sorry, bro. Yeah, anyway,
I was still super mature. I didn't even finish the semester before I was finally like, hey, partying with my friends.
All right, so people know, man, you're highly intelligent. Your grades obviously don't reflect what's really going on. So
yeah, I was just in an immature point in my life. I just needed to mature, and so I dropped my classes, was still living at home. My dad came home. Back in those days, he didn't need a password and ID to figure out everything. He knew my social, my date of birth, and he looked on. He came home that day, asked me how school was going. I said, it's going great.
I lied.
I did. I lied. I said, it's great. And he said, great, like, you got all A's, or great, like, you dropped all your classes and haven't told me yet. So I knew I was effed right there.
So are you giving me an A and B option here? Yeah. Or,
But he made it. He said, what's next? You're about to be gone. And I said, I'm joining the Navy. He was like, bullshit. You quit everything you do. And I was like, nope, I'm going to do it. I want to be a SEAL. So he supported me. I went, enlisted, and chose to be a medic. Waited 9 months to get in, and off to boot camp I went.
I forgot you were a corpsman.
Yeah.
What year did you jump in?
I came in 2003.
Oh, yeah. Right at time.
Old school, back when corps school was still at Great Lakes. It's right in San Antonio now.
Yeah. Oh, you had to go to corps school?
Yeah.
I didn't. I was a striker.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, that was the fastest way to get to buds. Yeah. Come to find out, it's the longest way to get to the SEAL teams, because the guys I graduated with had their Tridents and had already been on a deployment and come back, and I was still in the pipeline.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 3.5 years before I got to my team, because I was SDV and then con school and all kinds of stuff.
I think that's the medic way, because even after buds, I remember like third phase, you know, we'd pretty much made it, and they're calling out, getting everybody orders. Just went alphabetically, you know, and they're like, you know, so-and-so team 4, so-and-so team 7, and all of a sudden, like, my name got skipped. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm starting to sweat. Like, dude, what happened? And then, of course, I realized other guys' names weren't called either, and they were like, hey, if your name wasn't called, you're a medic, you're going to 18 Delta.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck is 18 Delta? I just thought, when I chose a job, I just chose it because I was like, man, I grew up as a lifeguard. I know CPR. I can be a medic.
Not realizing it's one of the hardest schools in the military.
Yeah. That was a kick in the
balls. The listeners out there who don't know what 18 Delta is, what is that?
I guess so. 18 Delta is what the SEAL medics used to go through. Now they've started their own program now, I think. They have their own medical course.
So the way it works with the Green Berets, their source ratings are identified by letter
number
codes.
Number and a letter, yeah.
Yeah, number and a letter. All right. In the SEAL teams, you got your source code, which is where 5326 is. So if you see that number 5326, like on the Mustang, in the Navy, everything has a number tacked to it, right? That's your identification number. Well, SEALs is 5326. And then if you're a medic, then you're a 5326 and then 8491, right? And then if you're an SDV guy, it's 5323. So you just stack these numbers up. And the way it works with the Green Berets is, as they're going through their pipeline, their selection course, right, when they make it through, so their bud's part of it, then they go to their qualification training. So if they're a medic, a comm guy, an explosive guy, officers are alphas. Then you got bravos. So 18 series denotes special forces. Yeah. Okay. And then after that, if it has an A, B, C, D behind it, that tells you what he is, what his job description is. So if they're 18 deltas, then that means that they're the medic. SEALs don't go through regular. People would ask me, I was like, I'm in the Navy, and like I was a medic. Like, oh, so you're a corpsman, you went to corps school. I was like, no, I didn't do that. I went from BUD straight to 18 delta. And it's also, you have the PJs, the Air Force Special Forces are there, the Rangers Special Forces. Everybody goes there. It's the most high-end medical school you can go to.
In the military.
And it's the longest route. So when you hear that, or if you hear any Special Forces guys talking, and they're like, oh, I was SF. And they're like, well, what'd you do? And they'll say, well, I was a Golf or a Bravo or a Delta or a Charlie or something like that.
So yeah, went through Delta school. How'd you do?
I passed.
There you go. Got that doctorate degree.
75 and a snowflake, right?
That's right.
74 and a snowflake.
All right, so Delta and then into the teams.
Yep, and I got my orders. I chose to go back to the West Coast, picked up my orders for SEAL Team 7 and showed back up there kind of right in the middle of the workup.
Did you get your orders out of muster at 18 Delta?
I did get my orders out of 18 Delta, yeah.
I remember that morning, man, we mustered up down there, and they were reading there, but it was just us, right? Because maybe some of the Ranger guys, but they started going down the list, too. And they got to my name, they're like, Trell, where do you think you're going? And I was like, three? And they're like, try again. I was like, five? I started going down the numbers. I want to go West Coast, too. And they were like, nope, it's three letters. And I was like, Dev Group?
I'll be honest. I would have been happy with any orders out of there as fast as possible. Because right? I ended up getting it. I had gotten in some trouble with the law when I was on rotations.
Yeah.
Last month.
Where'd you go do your rotation at?
In Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, yeah.
So I had gotten arrested down there.
Right.
Like 2 days before we left.
Of course.
And of course, I came back up there and just the other SEALs I knew. And I was like, dude, we can't tell anybody. They'll kick me out of here. We're a week away from graduating.
Oh yeah.
So I didn't say a word.
Typical SEAL story.
Because it's still a selection course for the Special Forces guys. So it's like they drop us into a portion of their SEAL, their BUDS training, right? And I mean, they're trying to get those guys out of there. With us, man, we made it through the pipeline, and they need us to become medics so we can go back, right? But it's still, I mean, I got my ass kicked in that class.
Well, plus it's the Army. I don't think they like us anyway.
Man. Around like midnight, you hear that knock on the door, be in there studying, instructor's like, get out. I'd still get wet, sandy, all that stuff, man. It was a joy.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did, went to SEAL Team 7. I did my first platoon there. Beautiful Southeast Asia, which was awesome. I mean, I think at first, everybody was a little bitter because I think, you know, Iraq was going, everybody wanted to be in Iraq, but we were the troop that got stuck to Southeast Asia. I think I was bitter about that for a while, but looking back now, that was like one of the best deployments.
Fun, right?
I wish I would have like enjoyed myself more, but came back from that, ended up going to sniper school. Of course, I wanted to be a breacher. My platoon chief said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to breacher school. He said, you're going to be a sniper.
Oh, good. Going to sniper school.
Which was awesome.
The opposite. In the teams, you know, that's like crossing the streams.
Yeah.
You get every qual you want, but if you're a breacher, then you stay that. If you're a sniper, then you stay that.
Sniper school was awesome, though. There were two guys from Dev Group in there. One guy was Colin Thomas, who unfortunately isn't with us anymore. He got killed a few years later, but I mean, he was an awesome guy. And the other, his sniper partner as well. I won't use names, but that was like the first time I got like a glimpse of like, where are you guys at? This looks awesome. And you guys are awesome. And they were just, they treated us great. And that kind of sparked my ambition to go to Dev Group. I came back from sniper school and they were still doing augments. So when the squadrons would deploy, they would take medics and guys like that. And I was obviously a medic, which was great. So I volunteered, I got permission and got to go over there. I did a deployment with them to Afghanistan, which was amazing, and came back from that, and that kind of solidified it for me. I knew I wanted to screen. Ended up doing my second deployment at a 7 to Iraq, and I screened right before that in that period. I came back, did the whole screening process, deployed with Team 7, came back, and I ended up getting picked up.
So for people who aren't familiar with the way that one works either, the SEAL teams are, it's a volunteer force, double volunteer, right? And then Dev Group's triple volunteer force. So you volunteer for the Navy, then you volunteer for Naval Special Warfare, and then you go through BUDS, and then SQT, then you get to your team, and then you do workup and stuff like that. And then as you're doing that, if you want to screen for dev group or SEAL Team 6, there's another selection process. So you just like when you screen for BUDS, you got to do the push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, swims, run, all that stuff like that. And then afterwards, there's another program called Green Team, which is it's like BUDS, right? It's but for team guys, and it sucks, right?
Yeah, I mean it's just a different kind of tough. It's more right. Mental and skill.
Yeah, because you're getting evaluated. Getting you're already a team kicked. Guy. Yeah, it's.
So you got over to the squadrons. Just some time over to squadrons. I'm gonna push you through this one.
Yeah, I mean a couple of deployments there, and then end up finishing my time on the West Coast, teaching skydiving. Ran the sky, gotten all things jumping there.
I forgot Denver. You were doing that.
And then I was the chief of the air cell on the West Coast. Handful of guys in there, and we put all the SEAL teams through the air portion of their workup, which was an awesome job. I started going back to school there. I'm sure we're going to get into all this. Got into the nonprofit world, and
yeah, we'll get back to that. So, for everyone out there, so what you've done already is you enlisted in, went through the SEAL teams, did time on the West Coast, went over across the street to Damneck, did your time over there, and then now let's get into the never quit story about your arm.
Morgan and I, shit, we live together.
Yeah.
That's roommates. Actually how I met you guys was through a good buddy of mine going through Green Team, met a bunch of great guys. One of my best friends being John Tummelson, JT, and was blessed to be introduced to all you guys going through because it's tough coming from the West Coast. You know, when you come from the West Coast here, I knew a handful of guys in the East Coast, but your T-80 orders, you're living in the barracks. So it wasn't until we finished and it was like, where are we going to live? You know, JT was like, hey, yeah. Morgan's on deployment. You should just crash at his house.
That's how I got the news. I was like, hey, we got a new roommate. And I was like, all right, cool.
He's like, Morgan said it was cool. But obviously leading up to like one of my things, a big event in my life that kind of started some never quit stuff was, you know, August 6, 2011. I was at the squadron. We were deployed.
Same squadron.
What's right. that?
Same squadron as JT.
Yeah, we were same squadron. We were lucky enough and different troops. I was at an outstation down in Kandahar. These guys were one of the two troopers all together. And I can remember the night we came back in from an op, do our usual, you know, debrief, after action report, send everything up, have a quick cocktail. And I went to my room and I just changed and laid down. And my team leader, I hear just bang on the door. Of course, I'm like, what? So I answer the door, and he's like, get into the jock here. It's just a small one. We walk in on the TV. It's just this fiery crash, you know, and you're just kind of like, what's going on? And then it just happened. Obviously, those guys were all on one helo, if you don't know, and the helo ended up getting shot down as they were coming in to land on an op, and we lost an entire troop. You know, I think there's 31 guys total, 25 mm-hmm. of ours. You're just watching it. You know, it's kind of surreal. Like you don't even know how to react. Like yeah. It's not real.
It's like watching on TV.
It is like watching on TV. It's right? like watching a movie. Like you're kind of emotionless. Yeah. You're like,
it's in your gut. You're like, who was on that?
And we knew, you know, and we knew everybody like, was on there. And you know, you're looking at me, I'm looking at my teammate and we're asking questions that we don't know the answer to. And we're just, you know, obviously the rest of this squadron all over the world started communicating very quickly and talking. And like I said, it was terrible. So I think those emotions start to come slowly and you just kind of don't know what to do. That was it took me years to realize how big of an impact that had on my life. I think I'm still to this day, but you know, seeing those guys and having your best friends go, I mean, JT, we moved out and JT bought a house and we lived together. And
so you want to explain what happened, what we're talking about when it comes to that, what the details on it? It was a helicopter went down with a bunch of our buddies on it.
Yeah. Chinook went down with an entire troop, a third of our squadron.
So there's a tick going on, right? There's a
troop. Yeah, Rangers were in there. Rangers were in contact. I just know that I think some guys squirted. I think the guy we were going after, I think they saw him leave and they knew where he's going. And so our guys launched to kind of come in for backup and go for it. And they were just
set up ready.
I mean, from the story, I mean, it's just one of those lucky is not a good word to use. It's a shitty word, but that's kind of just what happened. I guess some dude stepped out in the dark of night with an RPG and fired it off and ended up hitting the rear rotor. And, you know, those guys were a couple hundred feet up still coming in. It just dropped it. Dropped it out of the sky, obviously.
That shot, right? Nobody walks away from a helicopter.
Nobody
crash.
Walked away. I mean, it was, yeah. I mean, you got airplane fuel, explosives, all that stuff. I mean, the Rangers were awesome. They broke contact and, like, humped all night, like, running, secured the crash. They were on target for, like, 2 or 3 days getting stuff off of there. Bodies, everything, you know. After that, obviously, we flew into where they were at. There was a big ceremony in Bagram, and then we had to fly to their base and pack up all their stuff. You know, like, nobody was left to do that. So, which is just a freaky thing. You know, you walk in, and you're walking into your buddy's room that's set up like he just walked out.
Right.
You know, computers are still open, and beds are, you know, everything's just... As they left it to go walk and do the op, as we all do, expecting to come back, I suppose, you know, maybe, but it was just, you know, it's tough. And I remember during that time, they sent a bunch of psychs out, chaplains and stuff, obviously to talk with us, which I don't think anybody used, you know, at that time. If there's one thing I think we're good at, it's just stuffing emotion down that
repressing
box.
It. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just shutting that lid is like packing that suitcase and stepping on it and closing it.
As fuel, right?
It's one use for it, I guess, in a good way. But I mean, shoot, I remember being there. I don't think I showered for like a week. We were up there. I don't think I was sober for a week. And I remember one of the guys walked in the room. I was laying on one of the guy's beds, and I remember he started like dry heaving. He was like, "It smells like somebody just threw up in here."
I did.
And I was like, "Dude, I just took my shoes off. I'm sorry." Like, I think that finally motivated me to shower, but. You know, you pick up and you carry on, and we stayed overseas there. And, so we, you know, obviously we weren't home for the funerals and stuff like that. You come home and you have each other, you know, the guys that all know that part of it, but there wasn't a whole lot of talking about it. And unfortunately, I think shoving that much in that container for me at one time kind of cracked it. And those kind of emotions, to be honest, they become toxic over time. Like, I just, not talking about it. Over the next 3.5 years, I can look back and I can see, like, it really, really affected me. Like, it kind of stopped me throughout my entire career, man. I've always wanted to be the best. I've strived to be there. And I've been very lucky. Like, I made it through Buds as an original. Like, I never got rolled. Luckily, didn't get injured. I went to Dev Group, same thing. A lot of guys didn't make it. I made it. Like, I was very blessed, but I also never dealt with a lot of adversity. I know it sounds weird because we go through Buds and that sucks and you deal with that, but like, pain and suffering I can deal with. You know, you get good at putting them down. I think maybe that's what unites us all, is we're good at, you know, pain and suffering. We'll just tuck that away and keep trucking. But, you know, fast forward, I kind of put myself in this bubble. Like, I call it like a comfort zone, except it wasn't very comfortable. People wouldn't imagine it was comfortable, but it was where I was comfortable. And unfortunately, I wasn't comfortable getting outside of there. And I mean, one of the things we do as team guys is better ourselves constantly. And I kind of stopped doing that. I mean, I was back home. I mean, I could count on my old two hands. I could count on them.
Back when you had two hands?
Back when I had two hands, I could count on them. Like, the amount of days, like, I was sober, probably, you know, like, I would get off work and I would just drink. I was always, that was my coping method. And luckily I met my wife during this time, which, you know, she's a savior. It helped a little bit, but I still was just, I couldn't get out of it. You know, it's hard to talk about weakness and stuff like that in this place I was. And obviously, it's amazing that I stuck around that long, but it got to the point that it affected my job and my performance. And, you know, kind of like, I'm a big baseball fan, like Major League Baseball, they came to me and said, "You ain't cutting it," you know, which is the reality.
Yeah.
We deal with people's lives, and I mean, in my mind, you know, it was time for me to step back and step down and reorganize myself. And that was a huge blow to me for the first time. Was like real failure. You know, I feel like I failed my teammates. I failed myself. I just never been in that part, and I didn't know where to go. It's a very humbling experience.
Sure.
And I've been humbled, but not like that.
There's no bottom to that. You just keep falling.
You're right. Keep falling. And luckily, in this couple weeks after when I'm getting ready to, you know, head back to the West Coast and get on with it, my commanding officer at the time was an awesome guy, and he pulled me into the office and he kind of just gave me some words. He's like, dude, this isn't the end all be all here, man. There's a lot more to this life, and you need to make sure that, you know, you figure out what it is and square it away. And
yeah.
That was a big eye opener for me. And so it was a great transition. My wife was pregnant. You know, I was about to become a father. I went back to the West Coast and took over with the air cell. And that next kind of 3 years was a huge growth period for me personally and as a leader and a person. Like, I think as growing up as a young guy, a young SEAL, like, I never wanted to train. I never wanted to be a BUDS instructor. I always had this thing.
Oh,
I was
online,
like,
eh?
You know, you want to operate. And when I finally got put into this position to teach, it kind of reignited that old flame I had to keep bettering myself, and not only better myself, but pass down that knowledge and make these guys better. There's something empowering about making other people better and lifting them up.
Yeah, that's one great thing about our program. And I don't even know if they designed it like that when they developed it, but there's so many things throughout the program that are so beneficial. One of them is that.
Yeah.
I mean, the way new warriors get their fire is getting trained by the old ones.
Dude, the mentorship program is hands down, you don't get any better than you do in the SEAL teams, I think. I have been very blessed to have great, great mentors, platoon chiefs, team leaders. There was a point even after being, you know, a dev group for 5 years, I still felt like I was nothing. Like, because I looked around at the guys that were next to me, and I'm like, dude, these are the guys. I want to be like these guys.
Right.
Like, I'm not there yet. You know, that's the place where we all should want to be. But I found this growth period for me. It started growing, and I, like I said, I went back to my wife, put a boot in my ass finally to get back to school. I've been talking about finishing up my degree for ages, you know. Kid, I'm brand new father, which was awesome. That's best thing of all time.
Yeah, you got lucky. She's wonderful.
I mean, she saved my life more than one time. But during this period, I was back training with a really good friend of mine, and he had started a nonprofit called the SEAL Future Fund, which is now the SEAL Future Foundation. They changed their name, but he had taken it over, and the goal of this SFF was to help SEALs transition out of the military, whether that was to more education or finding a job on the outside. He had just gotten a great job offer back on the East Coast that he couldn't turn down. And so he came to me and said, you know, if I take this job, will you take over the SFF as a CEO? That was kind of a big, you know, we work in small teams. Being a leader is, to me at that point, I was like, man, I'm good with 20, 30 guys. But now you're talking about taking some of the weight off the entire community.
Community, right.
Like, that's a scary thought too, to like let guys down that way. But I talked about it, talked with the family, talked about it with him, and we agreed that I would do it. So got permission from I had to get permission from the West Coast, from the Commodore and everything, to take on like a dual job. I was still teaching skydiving, but luckily with the class schedule, I had a lot of downtime for school and taking this over. And then on top of that, you know, I got into the Harvard program that Morgan and I have been through. That's an executive education program through Harvard Business School.
Harvard tie. And
that's right. I got mine. Don't think I know.
Yeah, and a scarf to say. Yeah. But, barely got out of high school, quit college, got into SEAL teams, Harvard grad.
Yeah, essentially, if you fast forward like that. Yeah.
Doesn't sound that
Isn't that a great
good.
Way of looking at it?
I mean, my resume looks good.
When you say it like that, you're like, hold on, wait a minute. So I came from Nowheresville, Virginia. I barely got through high school. I dropped out of college.
Community college. I dropped community college.
And now I'm a Harvard graduate.
Yeah, now that you're a Harvard grad, you got to make the first part seem as miserable as possible. And there's two ways to get that education through life, right? You spend most of it in the... Because look at the first 40 years is just your education. A lot of people spend it in the building. And then when you walk in and say, hey, that diploma, when you look at that, it's supposed to tell you how smart that person is, right?
Yeah.
That's their trident, if you will. Man, you can do it the way we did it. Just go out there and your resume is on your body, your scars, and it tells your story. And then at the end of that, you sit down in that building and see how much you learn throughout life and how many of them things you can stack up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. It's funny because we talk about the school thing and, you know, being a SEAL, but I'll be honest, one of my biggest fears through the teams was going back to school. I mean, I didn't do any college. I remember being in that classroom a little bit, and I had talked about taking classes like after my first platoon. I was like, oh man, free education, I get in some classes. And I don't know, this fear of like being back in a classroom with kids that were younger than me and in my head smarter than me. Like, I don't know, I just thought about like math and doing fractions. It's just stupid shit. But I mean, that fear
kept you from doing it.
Disabled me, yeah, in a sense. And I always found an excuse to skip it. Mm. I'd rather be deployed overseas. I'd volunteer for deployment and take a school, take training. And the excuse was always, well, I'm doing this, I don't have time for that. Like, this is my focus. Like, the SEAL teams are my focus. Like, school will come in. And in the beginning, of course, I thought I'd just do it forever.
Yeah, of course.
And you're like, what do I need school for? I'll just do it forever. But, you know, that's one piece of advice I could give the younger guys. It's like, man, use what you got while you're in and get, uh-huh, that education, man. And like, you'll regret it if you don't.
Well, in the program that we were in, man, youth is your tool. When you can't do it on the back end.
Yeah.
That's why it's designed that way. So if you decide to go that route, that military route, and people talking about free college, and literally if you, everything that we're sitting in and everything that we've accomplished is because we threw that uniform on. And then it just, one door led to another. And it started with just the regular education, like 3M or, you know, just, yeah, something, load planner.
Yeah.
Whatever schools they would throw at you. And that's literally sitting in the classroom and doing the school deal. And by doing that, it teaches you how to go sit in the regular classroom.
You know, at this point, I'm training skydivers. I'm running a nonprofit, and I'm in school. When the Harvard, I mean, I was starting to find my balance in there, and then a couple more things got thrown on. But I was passionate about all of them, and I wanted to get my education. So when the Harvard thing came up, I was like, yo, am I actually accepted to this program? Did they look at my past school records? But well, shout out to that program.
Like AA Rod, right?
Lisa Hughes. I mean,
Lisa's amazing.
Lisa, we love you. I mean, she is a game changer over there. She's a patriot, loves our guys, knows what we're bringing to that table, that whole program does. So I end up getting to that program, put the undergrad on a hold, and started doing the Harvard route, which was an amazing,
life-changing education. Yeah.
Extra life-changing for me, obviously, because as we were talking about in the beginning, that's where, smack dab in the middle of that program, is when I got in an accident.
Yeah, let's hear about that guy. Let's hear about
greatest
that guy.
Story ever.
Yeah, so, geez, I guess that story starts off.
Paint the picture and the mood. Should we put some
music
on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what kind of music you
draw
use.
The curtains? I mean,
it'd be hard because it's comical, but every year after Thanksgiving, I'd go out to a ranch out here in Texas with a couple guys, a couple of teammates that were out now. And we'd do some sniper work with guys just for fun, end up becoming a bunch of good friends of ours. So I think this was like the third year, come out to do it. It was a Tuesday morning. I think it was the 28th. We're getting up in the morning, feeders go off or whatever. You know, these guys are just sitting in stands and shooting. I'm getting up and I'm driving down to the bunkhouse where all our gear was just to grab my stuff and come back up. And I mean, I think I was about I don't know. The story kind of changes. I think I was about a mile away, but I was in a curve and ended up losing control and just rolling that as a side by side. I mean, I wasn't hauling ass, but obviously speed was a little bit of a factor, but I was just trying to get down there and I was in a curve, gravel path, thin path too. So like I couldn't counter and drive off the path. I would have crashed into a tree. So I just, once that ass end started to lose traction, I just started pumping the brakes and trying to lean in. And you know that point in your head because you could feel it in your equilibrium when that back tire just dug in and it just hit that point. And I said, I'm going over. And obviously, it's a new vehicle. I didn't know where no door, you know, and I didn't know where the handles were. But I just gripped that steering wheel as tight as I could. And when it hit on its side, it jarred me to the ground. But I just had a little scratch on my forehead, scratch on my ankle. But essentially, as I slid a couple feet, I was doing like a side plank to keep my face from just getting destroyed. So I had my weight on my forearm and I saw my arm snap. Like I'm looking down at my, obviously adrenaline's pumping, but I see my wrist and my elbow get closer together. And I'm like, shit, I just broke my arm. So
awesome. I stopped.
Well, I stopped and you know, you do a quick mental checklist and I'm like, whoo, like broken arm. That's fine. I've broken my arm before. Like this is easy. Like, and I just stood up. And when I stood up, I mean, my hand, it was still attached, but only because of like
piece of skin.
The skin on the top that hadn't got eroded away.
Right.
I mean, flesh and bone were gone, and my hand was hanging like a fishing pole.
Oh, God.
And I mean, awesome. Blood everywhere at this point, and I'm looking. And I mean, I remember yelling to myself. I was like, out loud, I was just like, fuck. Like, it wasn't, that connection hadn't hit yet. Like, in my head, I was okay.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this is a game changer.
That's like, awesome, dude.
This isn't like I'm just going to limp back after. Shit's got to happen. But
life has changed.
Yeah. Dirt on it.
I mean, right, you know, now. Fucking Murphy's Law. You know, if it can't happen, it will happen at the worst possible time for us. So, you know, I'm by myself. My phone has been flung out of the vehicle. I mean, I knew where it was, thank God. But
probably no reception out there.
Luckily, shout out to my brother, Hannafa Jones, Charo. He gave me this Jack Daniels belt years ago, this soft leather belt. It's kind of a weird story there if I back up. The day I was leaving for that trip, had all my stuff packed, my wife and daughter at home. I've already got the Uber. The Uber's like parked outside. And I'm like, my belt was on the banister of our stairs like the night before. And I go to grab it and it's not there. And I'm like, Mindy, I'm like, where's my belt? Because I know she gets in these cleaning modes.
Yeah.
The tornado comes through. And of course, she doesn't even know where she puts stuff. She cleans so much. And so I'm like, where's the belt? And she's like, I don't know. Just get another belt. And it, like, for some reason, whatever, the Almighty was looking out for me. Like, I kind of got angry. I was like, where's my effing belt? You know, I'm like, I need that belt. She's like, why? I'm like, because I love it. You know, just get it for me. So luckily she found it. I put that belt on out the door. Fast forward to this point, I'm wearing this belt, thank God, because I'm telling you, the other belts I had, stiff leather, they would not have worked. This was like a soft leather belt. This was meant to happen. Man, I just, in a split second, luckily, my mind went to, like, survival mode.
The Corman in you.
The Corman in me, man. I whipped this fucking belt off, and I'm, with my mouth, you know, I loop it through, and I have to dangle my hand. You know, remember that old fishing game?
Yeah, the fishing pole and the
fish are coming out.
I got one in my garage.
Trust me, man. It took me a couple tries to get that.
How bad was it hurting by now, or was it?
I mean, I'm telling you, no pain whatsoever. I mean, I knew the situation I was in. Like, fully, I knew that I do something or I'm not going to make it. So I get my hand in there. I whip this thing up. I pull this thing as tight as I can. And of course, the first thing I do is like start running. And I don't know, about 10 yards before I said,
hold on. Bad idea.
Because I'm like, I can't tell. I mean, obviously, blood's still dripping everywhere. I can't tell. I mean, I'm hoping I stopped the bleeding. I stopped as best I could, but there's still blood. So I ended up having to like do an extra wrap and bite this thing. Like I put this belt in my mouth to bite it and keep it tight. And then I have to pick my hand up with my other hand because my hand is swinging like a freaking. So I'm like holding my hand, which is a weird feeling. I'm like holding a kind of almost detached hand. But I end up just being like in my mind, I knew it was just like kind of tunnel vision. But I was like, move with a purpose and get back to the house where the guys are at. You know, I had to get back up there. So like I said, for me, I think it's about a mile. It's like a William Wallace story. It always grows. I've heard 2 miles, like 10 miles, whatever. But I think it was about a mile.
200 miles.
Ran a marathon. But I get back to the house, and the funny part was this ranch house was so freaking nice. Sliding doors everywhere, and they were kind of cracked, and guys are up. And I kicked this door with my feet. I didn't even go in the house. I think I didn't want to dirty the house up because I'm like bloody. And I was,
that's polite.
The guys are looking at me, and I just go, you know, call 911. And they're like, what? And I'm like, fucking call 911. And I could see their faces when they finally put the whole picture together. And they're like, they just start running to me. And I just kind of went down to the ground. Like I laid down in this mulch and shit. And they came out. And luckily they were great. I talked them into, like we had med kits out there. And so I was like, hey, first thing I did was talk them into putting like another tourniquet on my arm, like an actual cat tourniquet.
Mm.
First pain I felt, he's putting that cat tourniquet on, and there's a guy out there that worked the ranch who was, I mean, he had to be 300 pounds. He's like 6'6", 300 pounds. They were like, grab that belt and don't let him bleed out.
Yeah.
He put a knee on my shoulder, and he pulled that belt so freaking tight, man, that, I mean, that was the first pain I felt.
Oh.
But they've had blankets on me, and then my memory blanks out as soon as the ambulance showed up, which was about 30 minutes. So I remember them calling 911. I remember hearing it's 30 minutes for the ambulance. People talk about life flight. It was, you know, 5:36 in the morning. It's too foggy for life flight.
Yeah.
It was one of those mornings. So ambulance picks me up. I sort of go out. I think my adrenaline was dumping at that point. Although there's a sheriff's deputy that we keep in touch with. She was one of the first responders, and she was on the ambulance with me initially. And she said, I turned into like a crazy man. Like they had IVs in me, and I'm ripping shit out, and I'm like, I think I was just freaking out, like everything dumped, and I was just shock was setting in. But they had everybody holding me down, and they finally got into town. The Life Flight nurses, the trauma nurses, swapped them out, and then we continued on to San Antonio. At some point in there, you know, I think I started to go. They got me to the hospital, and of course, my next memory from the ambulance is waking up in the hospital. And I'm waking up, coming to, obviously, they've already done the amputation. So they have
You pretty much took care of that, right? They just had to clean her up?
they just snip it up and clean it up. Really, yeah. They did. And thank God, they actually did an awesome job. So talking to my surgeon later, a lot was dependent on how clean that wound was, because it was up close to the elbow.
Yeah.
And luckily that doc, I don't know the main doc's name, but funny part of the story is when I'm waking up, one of the other doctors, a younger guy, was there talking to me. And this guy's name is Dr. Hand.
Mm, of course it is, yeah.
So thank you, Dr. Hand. Thank you, God. Even Mindy got a laugh at that one. We're like, is this guy serious? Like, really? You're the one talking to me? And he's going through this story of, you know, we had to amputate, yada, yada, yada. And then, so my wife is there, and then two old SEAL buddies of mine. And in this story.
This is where it gets good, right?
Yeah. In this story, as he's telling him, I don't even remember who, my wife, one of the guys is like, hey, Doc, you know, where is his hand? And I don't even remember the response because I'm kind of drugged up, but I'm essentially, he's like, well, it's probably going down to get destroyed.
Morgue. Yeah, down the morgue.
And it's like, can we have it? And I can kind of remember the doctor's face. He's kind of like, what? And they're like, yeah, can we have the hand? And so now I'm just like, yeah, can I keep it? And he's like, I don't know, guys. He's like, it would have to be like a religious reason. And of course we're like,
done.
Bingo. I said, we got to bury that thing. That's a piece of me. This is where it has to go.
I have this religious belief that if I don't bury it.
It's a religion you don't know the name of.
It won't find me in the afterlife.
Me, yeah.
I'm going to need this.
I have to get buried with this thing.
This is where the story really gets good.
So anyway, he's like, look, I'll ask. I don't, you know. So he comes back a couple hours later and he's like, hey, you can pick the hand up tomorrow. So that night, we're over getting swapped over to the military hospital at BAMC and, you know, stay there. The next day, two of my buddies, my one buddy that I know of, they go back to, and this guy, he's no relation to me, doesn't share a name with me, whatever, but goes back and they just hand off the hand. Allow myself to introduce myself
to my hand.
Yeah. They hand off the hand to my buddy. And so, you know, everybody at this point, like more SEALs have flown in, good buddies of mine, everybody's flying in to make sure I'm okay. And so they're like, well, what do we do with the hand? They're all staying like a Spring Hill Suites Marriott or something like that, you know? So they stick it in the freezer. It's a natural course, you know?
At the hotel room.
In the hotel room. Yeah, so there's a bunch of guys in the hotel that this guy puts in the freezer.
This is where you can't make this stuff.
Comes
up.
Back to the hospital. And so this goes on. I mean, the hospital was great. I mean, I know, talking about never quit story, you know, you think like losing this hand, it's devastating. The chance to ever really feel bad about the hand never came up, right. You know, like, I mean, it's funny because I mean, you guys visited and you saw the staff. I spent about 2 weeks in like this Four West and that staff there is amazing. And they freaking loved us. Right. I mean, we had a party going on. They finally gave me my own room. Cause they're like, there's too many people here. You're bothering everybody else.
No, we're not.
But I mean, the hand jokes were flying.
Right, right.
I mean, there's just, I think even the nurses were just like, they're like, I don't think this is how you're supposed to talk to people who just got injured.
Yes,
you know?
It is. Absolutely.
But there's no other way to do it in our community because you just, I mean, everything's comical, but it's also, I'm like, the first thing I did was like, hey, I'm alive. You know, I get to go home and I get to see my wife. I get to see my daughter. I carry on no matter what. And so originally they were telling me, hey, I had more bone than I had skin and muscle to cover it up. So I had this wound vac on for weeks. And they said, you know, every doctor I talked to was like, hey, you're probably going to lose your elbow. We can't cover it up. You're probably going to lose it. And of course, the mindset at that point is just like, dude, whatever. Like, let's get this thing over with. Like, I didn't know any better at the time of being an amputee. But I'm like, I'm alive. I want to get out of the hospital. Let's just do this thing. So when the surgeon, my surgeon came in, I mean, he's still active. I don't want to use his name, but best surgeon in the world. He came in and he was like, hey, I'm going to MacGyver this shit and I'm going to save your elbow. I'm like, fantastic.
Good. So, I like this attitude.
Yeah. So we did a couple more surgeries to make sure everything was cleaned up. Obviously, parallel to this is the hand is still in the freezer.
In the freezer.
during the day. The guys are all at the hospital during the day. We're all coking and joking, having a great time. At night, these guys are going back, and I'm getting pictures with it.
Oh,
these
are, it's a party with the hand.
It's a party, guys are selfies with the hand. Guys are popping, taking selfies. People are shaking my hand, making videos with
it. With the hand. Yeah. With the, I have pictures on
which
my phone.
Which is funny, because honestly, when you look at it, it's kind of gnarly.
It's disgusting.
It is real gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it looks like a prop, but it's just like the skin is all wrinkled. Yeah, yeah. It's just like... It like it's dying, you know, and you're like,
and it's got it's like it's wearing a glove that's too big.
Yeah. Tell the best part.
So yeah, so anyway, yeah, it's probably been like a week, and one of my buddies has to leave, and the hand is in his freezer for whatever reason, and so he goes to the front desk, and he's like, "Hey, can I get a key, you know, a room key to this other room? I have some money to put in there," and they're like, "Well, no, but here, give it to us, and we'll put it in there for you." And he's like,
probably not a good idea.
So I guess, I don't know if it was like the weird reaction to it, like him just walking away and whatever else that evening, the hand stayed in that freezer because somebody else is going to use the room. But the maid or the manager, somebody goes
the maid finds
the hand, clean out the freezer.
That's the greatest story.
There's a human hand in the freezer.
There's a damn hand in there.
Yeah. So.
That poor lady.
I'm sure this is not what is in the job description of like cleaning out body parts.
You imagine look on her face like, what is that?
I wish I could see it. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall. But obviously, they call the police. It's a natural thing to do. There's a body part.
There's a body part in my freezer.
And the guy who had the room is kind of a strangely acting fellow.
All right.
My bad.
So the police show up there, and it's funny because the hotel like knew we were all there for whatever reason. They call the hospital, and the hospital staff is like, "Hey, hotel, like, you got to go back. The police are there." So the two of my buddies are like, the guy with the hand, the other guy that knows about the hand, like, they end up going back there. And I don't know, 30-45 minutes later, I had a telephone in my room next to my bed, you know, like to the outside world, and all of a sudden it rings. I'm like, "Hello." It's like, "Hey, this is Detective so and so, you know." And I'm like, "Hey, detective.
Are you missing a hand?"
Well, you didn't even ask me. I just jumped into it because I'm like, I don't know if these guys are like getting hemmed up, arrested. I'm like, "Hey, detective. Like, hey, my name's Aaron Kennel. You know, like, that's my hand. Here's the story."
They got a hand. I'm missing my foot. Where the hell did they get that?
Yeah. You got a foot there? I should have asked for my body parts.
No, I got them all good, man.
Yeah, hindsight being 2020, I should have messed with them a little bit more. But I was just trying to make sure guys like weren't in trouble. So I said, I gave my buddies names. And those are my buddies. I don't know. You can come test me, whatever. Those are my fingerprints. They're still there. I'm sure you can take DNA, but I mean, he was like, "Hey, it's all good. We just need to make sure this wasn't a homicide, you know?" So it's all good. So at that point, obviously now it's weird that there's a body part in the hotel. And so next question is like, well, what do we do with it now? It can't stay here. So the next logical answer became, well, let's take it to a taxidermist. Obviously, out towards Kerrville, where we did all the hunting, and
we got plenty of taxidermists.
Yeah, plenty
phone,
of taxidermists and guys that the guys knew. So they bring it back there, and I wish I knew who they would. I'd give them a shout out. They did an awesome job, and I think they put it to the front of the line, being as they were like, "Hey, we don't get to work on human stuff,
human so hands.
We don't get to do a lot of human stuff."
I wonder what
here,
he was just like looking at that thing, going, "Hmm."
I think they were excited for it, but either way, so. Hand goes to the taxidermist, and they asked me, like, "What do you want?" And so the initial plan that I wanted...
Shoulder mount.
Well, the initial plan I wanted was to... obviously, like, I'm a big wine drinker. I consider myself, like, an aficionado a little bit. But I wanted to make it, like, I don't know, it's hard to see, but like a skeleton hand doing, like, the Spock thing where I could hold a wine glass with, like, a stem. You know, so if I was at a party, I could bring this hand and hold wine.
My hand.
My hand. I quickly realized that they couldn't do it because they have to drill through, put wire. It becomes very brittle. Like it's not weight bearing at all. So I finally got it back in January of this year. It's in a beautiful, like I could describe it as like the Beauty and the Beast, like forever rose that they have,
exactly.
You know,
like snow globed.
They got it like in a nice rock there that they chiseled my bones. You can see right where the bone snapped, you know, it's still all there. My hand's there.
I can vouch for that. I've had the hand in my hand.
Yeah. I don't think they knew exactly what it would be used for because obviously now it's this. Obviously, my wife doesn't let me keep it out in public. It's in our closet.
Yeah.
But when people come over and kids, my daughter loves it.
It's a great conversational piece.
It's a great conversation piece. And people come over and I bust it out and like I chase kids around with it and play tag. And it's gotten caught in hair and all sorts of stuff where I think I need to take it back because, like, the glue in between all the bones. There's a lot of bones in your hand. The glue in there is, like, starting to come apart. Like, at some part, I feel like this hand's going to start to fall apart. So I'm going to need to.
It's going
to
be an heirloom forever.
Yeah, for Halloween, you just put on, like, the trench coat. Remember, was it Zoolander? David Duchovny had his hand in there. I got my hand model.
But I suppose. For Halloween. You know, I'm looking at stuff. If, you know, obviously, there's a lot in there where people. I remember when I started to go to rehab at the CFI, which is the best facility in the country. You know, it's. They have the best staff, the best people. I couldn't ask to be in a better place. In fact, one of the doctors said it to me one of the mornings when they came in super early. Because I'm a Navy guy. And the doctor goes, you stationed here? I said, no. He's like, what are you doing here? I said, I got in the accident here. And he looked dead at me and he goes, you picked a good place to get in an accident. Mm-hmm. And that's true. And so I end up, my command let me stay out here to rehab. Just fantastic. But I remember my surgeon, a couple other people were like, man, I can't wait for you to get over to the CFI because there are people that accidents happen to and their attitude, you know, like they feel like they're in despair, like this thing happened to them and it affects them. Luckily, you know, looking back on my life and all the downside to it was perspective, you know, like, like I said, my perspective was I'm alive and my plan is to get back as best as I can be. You know, I tell people like I had a plan A. My plan A was to live my life with two hands, man. Mm. Like I love that left hand. We've been through a lot of shit together.
Right.
But
literally
plan A is no longer possible. So you can sit there and you can dwell on how great plan A would have been. It would have been great. Trust me, I have great plans, but you know, now it's time to move on to plan B. I didn't have a plan B, but I created one. Mm. And if plan B doesn't work, I'm going to create a plan C. But you know, I went in there every day with the attitude of making myself better. And there's great people over there, but they were excited for my attitude to come over there and hopefully become infectious and work hard and get back. Like this accident doesn't define me, you know. In fact, people all the time like, oh man, how is it? I'm like, well, it ain't that bad. I mean, I can do pretty much. I'm sure there's going to be obstacles in life that are going to come.
This is just part of it.
There's obstacles with two hands that are going to come, but there's just ways. Now my way is just figuring out how to do it as best I can. I always joke because people go, where's your prosthetic? I mean, I've had a prosthetic for fuck a year and a half. I remember going in to see my prosthetist at the CFI, and he was like, hey, have you been using your hand?
What's it called?
Prosthetist.
Oh, yeah. Good articulation.
Not to be confused.
Well, he does do hand jobs, though.
He does do hand jobs. But I hadn't seen him in like 6 months, and he's like, hey, you've been wearing the prosthetic? And I was like, don't you have the prosthetic? He was like, oh, boy. He's like, so you haven't worn it one time, have you? I'm like, well, I haven't. But it's only because I've just figured out ways around it, and it becomes more of a pain to get it on and try to do it than just doing it.
You get around great.
Well, I appreciate that.
I mean, you know? I hadn't even seen anything you can't do.
Yeah, that's the best part about having a team, guys, man.
Sure, when cut your steak.
When we do get injured, it's just like the overall mentality is, but first, like, hey, man, you put something on there and make me even faster, stronger, kind of turn me into a cyborg.
Yeah.
But I mean, we got a couple buddies that I went to college with one guy. Is it Trey Wood?
Trey.
God dang, that guy, he could.
He like he you. Played, I mean, that's where, he wouldn't even know he didn't
football,
have.
Football, baseball. Yeah. Lifted, he would bench over 300 pounds.
Yeah. I woke up this morning and Kendall was outside in the yard, in the barn rowing.
Yeah.
And then doing planks. Yeah, I don't do that. And I'm.
Yeah, man, it's something, brother.
Yeah, my wife told me it's time to lose some weight. So I had to get out there. No, just kidding. But, I mean, and a shout out to my wife and my daughter, you know, they've been behind me. And that's one of the biggest things too, is when I got out of that hospital, I mean, they're like, don't move your arm. I got staples in. I mean, my daughter doesn't realize that I'm injured. You know, when I walked in that door, it's dad time again. Right. Like, and that was there's no more motivating factor than that right there to like be the father that you were, or want to be, you know, and the husband you want to be. And so, you know, when I came back, every time I'd see him in rehab, I'd be like, I'm lifting my arm over my head. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm like, trust me, I'm not going to injure myself. I know the difference there, but I'm going to push myself every day to get back to normal. Like, I know that you have a timeline, but I have a timeline too. And I know that I can do better than what you're telling me. But man, just being in that place every day, I mean, forget the SEALs. There was a civilian lady in there that she had to be on here. She was like a sheriff's deputy. And she woke up one morning in writhing pain. And they called an ambulance. And when she woke up at the hospital, they amputated all four of her limbs. She had some virus that was killing her. And she They amputated all four. And I see her there every day at rehab.
Above and below joints? Or
I think mostly below, but I don't quote me on that. But she's getting prosthetics, but I've seen her in a chair with her dog. And she is at that rehab center every freaking day, man. And I'm just like...
Yeah, we need to get her on the show.
Dude, I'm telling you, I mean, that's the kind of... You look at that and you're like, I always make the analogy. You've seen, what is it, Half-Baked?
Yeah.
You know, when Bob Saget, he goes to AA and whatever, and he's talking about smoking weed and being addicted to weed, and Bob Saget stands up and he's like, I don't want to, you know, he's like, you ever sucked dick for coke, you know? He's like, that's not a joke. Like, that's kind of how I, like, when people ask me, like, oh, man, it's so terrible. I'm like, dude, it's the hand. Like, I've run marathons with these guys. I did a marathon with a bunch of other amputees, and, you know, these guys are like, F you, Kendall. He's got two legs. Forget about this guy. Like, you know,
right?
It's not a thing. That's why, you know, my mindset is just, it's not there. I mean, it's not there, but I mean, it's just, everything is normal. And I just, every day is just make it better than it was before. And
sure.
That's honestly, awesome. It's a challenge now. I try to outperform people. You know, it's fun to do stuff and people are like, oh shit, you know, where's your hands? Like, ah, fuck.
Anybody can do that with two hands. Try to do it with one and a half.
That's right.
I had a buddy of mine here recently, one of the Green Berets who pulled me off the mountain.
Yeah.
He loves riding motorcycles. And he's a little bit older, but he was in a crash recently, and he got paralyzed from the waist down. And I went to see him the other day. And with anything, he was kind of down on himself. I was like, hey, man, let's just put this in perspective, right? And I was like, you got a new set of wheels here. How much time you spend on that motorcycle? Then when you're at home, you're sitting down. I was like, man, now you got permanent wheels. You love to ride anyways, man. You soup this thing up. There's not, and then the in-between stuff, man, that just draws you close to your family, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's okay to, a lot of times with guys like us, it's that pride that we can't fulfill our duties, but man, that's just you thinking about that. Just,
yeah. I mean, life's funny that way, man. I mean, we joked before we started this, you know, obviously I live in Texas here now and I love it, but for years, you know, Morgan and Vin, you guys have been talking about, hey, when you get out, come to Texas. And I was always
negative.
No, Texas ain't for me, man. I'm just not my cup of tea. I didn't really want to. And 2 months after being here, my wife's just like, I love it here. And I'm like, I do too. People are great. Found some great friends. Everybody's close by. And that was kind of the joke that we made earlier. It was like, well, what happened? You used to not want to live in Texas. And I was like, well, that was two-handed me.
Yeah.
Two-handed me didn't like Texas. Yeah. One-handed me. And really enjoys being here in Texas. So.
Well, thank you so much for coming out and doing and sharing your weekend with us, man. And
I appreciate it.
I love you like a brother.
Yeah, never stop living, man. Every time you come in here, just damn joy. And just touching on some of the stuff with what we did today, man. Just those never quit moments. It's kind of funny that those don't really define us as what we are, man. It was the lead up to all of that, and that was just one of the steps in it. And that goes. It's part of the course of anything you do, man. And just, there's supposed to be some roadblocks, right? Or hurdles or
absolutely,
or whatever you want to call it. But if you don't look at them like that, as the barriers, as the problem, is just as, it's just something that we have to get through. It's like if life is an obstacle course, the obstacles are set in it, right?
Yeah.
And I
mean, we talked about it earlier. I always tell people, like, if you look at my resume, man, it looks really good. But what you don't see is in between every one of those great bullets is a bunch of failure,
bunch.
A bunch of hardship, you know, and it's obstacle after obstacle. But, you know, the difference is those aren't my bullets. Those obstacles and those failures aren't my defining moments. It's everything that comes after that that you grow from.
Sure. That's what makes you into all that, are those moments.
All right, Aaron, thanks again for being on the show today. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, just one thing. If people are looking out, I started a business with a buddy of mine, do some consulting after the Harvard gig. Figured I'd take kind of all the lessons we've learned and from the community and personal life and hope to better people. So we do some consulting out of Elite Team Performance. So you can find us at eliteteams.com.
Yeah, and I can speak to it. It's great to have Kendall up in front of a crowd going through what he'd been through, and his attitude's infectious. So.
You got anything else? Are you on social media as well?
Yeah, I am. I don't. It's just
something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about that.
That's how they're gonna find you.
Do I need to change my name on social media? I should probably get a more professional name if I'm gonna.
What is it now?
Redmanda 252.
Redmanda 252.
There you go, Redmanda 252. Not that I'm that interesting on social media, but there you go.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
brother. Thanks for coming on here and doing that, man. I thoroughly enjoy our time together when we get to hang out, and then sitting back and listening to you tell the story to all our listeners out there, man, it still brings as much happiness and humor to me as the day you told some of those stories to me for the first time. So thank you again for being who you are and being a good teammate, man. We love you.
Kendall's one of those guys you just need to have in your life because his attitude's infectious.
Man, he's such a positive guy.
Since day one, when we went out to San Antonio to see him, he's just laying in the hospital bed. He just had a positive, and he's like, yeah, no big deal. You know what happens.
So you hadn't seen his face. He's got. I'm sure you have friends out there or know somebody who does. He's got that. He has a smirk that he gets, man. It's just kind of infectious. Even in the bad times, he's like, when things are going real bad, he'll get that grin. He's like, man, can you believe this is what the hell's going on here? And it does, man. A lot of people look at our humor and call it dark, but you know our life and everything that we're trained in is kind of in that realm. So our humor has to.
I've never seen him in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously, everybody has that, and he keeps it. But when he's in and around folks, he's just and his laugh when he clacks that laugh off.
Yeah, yeah.
He can't, and nobody can beat him up and make fun of him more than he makes fun of himself. I guess that's one of his gifts. When I got up this morning, he was outside rowing with one hand, and then he gets off the rowing machine and starts doing planks and push ups on that nub. I'm sitting there in my chair outside with the kids drinking coffee. I'm like, I'm such a lazy bastard.
Saturday. He's a prime example to tell yourself and to show yourself, man, that just never stop. Never get down. I mean, a bad time isn't something that you have to take every day. It's just something that you had to take at that moment. You take the lessons learned from it and push forward, man. Never quit. Thank you guys for bringing us back and never giving up on us. We can't thank y'all enough, man.
Sure hope you guys enjoy listening to what us and everybody that's on the show, because we sure have a lot of fun doing it. Thank y'all. God bless.
If you want to be the first one to know when we drop new episodes, make sure you've subscribed to the show. You can press the purple subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or any other major podcast player to be notified the moment we drop a new episode.
And if today's episode ignited a new fire in you, if there's one thing that I've learned, it's that sharing your story is a powerful thing. There are people out there that need a kick in the ass, and your story could be the one thing that changes their life forever. So take a minute to share your story at teamneverquit.com/podcast. Just click on the Share Your Story button in the menu so we can encourage you along the way. Your story just might be shared on one of our upcoming podcasts.
If you're already following us on Facebook and Instagram, you know we like to keep our followers up to date with gear, sales, events, guests, and tons of other stuff you won't find anywhere else. If you aren't following us, you are missing out, so go check us out at team_neverquit. You can also keep up with Marcus at Marcus Luttrell, and Morgan at Mojo Luttrell, and me at Hunter013.